Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. My name is Armand Farouk, and I'm here with my co-host, Mark Coscolo. And today, we have the VP of Sales over at Guesty. It's the one and only Jonah Mandel. Mark, why should people listen?
Jonah has been the guest so far that has really been able to articulate thoughtful ways of doing change. Like, we talk in this episode about helping people get promoted and how to change behavior. And I'd say there's two or three just very tactical things that required a lot of thought and effort that he goes into really deeply here that I think a lot of people that are tackling those type of problems would benefit from.
That's right. And I hear if you listen to this episode all the way to the end, you will get promoted. So 3, 2, 1, begin.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do, do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes.
This actionable tactic on selling to power is sponsored by SalesLoft. Don't start from zero when a champion introduces you to power. Explain the 3 to 4 priorities you learn from the champion, but then ask them to validate what's really important to them or what we miss. And we partnered with SalesLoft to give you a whole bunch of talk tracks on selling to power. The link is in the show notes.
Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Super Cadence by Influ 2, which helps cut through the noise of oversaturated prospecting channels. If you want to get your prospect's attention, you got to do stuff a robot would never do. One of my favorite plays is getting warm introductions to the accounts that I'm targeting via salespeople who work at that account. Salespeople help salespeople. Another approach could be using Super Cadence to run SDR ads to put a face to the name. Now, we worked with Influ 2 to put together a special toolkit on ways to humanize your outreach, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes.
Here's my secret to being a sales superhuman. It's auto reminders for everything. If I expect any reply from a prospect, I press Command H and Superhuman pops it right back into my inbox if I don't get a reply in 2 days. That means if you handle an objection, if you suggest times for a meeting, or if you ask for cuts back on red lines, always create a 2-day reminder task and assume they will not reply. So if you want to follow up on time every time, you can get a free month of Superhuman by checking it out in the show notes.
Alrighty, Jonah, welcome to the show. We start every leadership show with your top 3 actionable takeaways. Let's get your 3.
Tip number 1, before promoting from within, test drive. So we've all been there, turning your top performing account executive into a manager. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Give them actual projects and assignments that are outside of their scope as an AE and as a closer and more in line with what they're going to do as a manager. An example, have them lead a team meeting. Have them train a new hire, and then also have them join a leadership meeting to show their managing up skills and actually walk leaders through the metrics from last quarter.
Boom. What's number 2?
Tip number 2, driving behavior change starts with you as a leader. What does that actually mean? So an example that a lot of us are probably struggling with today, how do we take inside inbound sales folks, turn them in to outbound machines? To me, it boils down to 3 things. You have to hire for it, you have to comp it, and you have to make sure that it's a topic of conversation in every meeting. So hiring for it. A lot of times working with your people or recruiting teams, they are trying to find profiles of candidates that match the profiles of folks that are sitting in seat today. If you want to change the culture, you have to sit down with your HR team, with your recruiters, and you have to say, hey, I know Johnny and Jill have X, Y, and Z attribute. We need to bring in a different type of person. Here is what we're actually looking for. Comp plan. It's not just about top line revenue. You also need to implement whether it's spiffs, accelerators, President's Club for folks that are hitting outbound and actually bringing in deals that are not through the traditional inbound channels. The next, highlighting in every team meeting. At the end of the quarter, when you do that review of last quarter and you highlight everyone that's doing an amazing job, have a third line item that actually says, hey, Jill hit the highest outbound number. Jill, how did you do it? Share it with the group.
Alrighty, Jonah, bring us home. What's number 3?
Tip number 3, setting proper expectations during the interview process. It's really important that we don't oversell during the interview process. We all lean that way, whether it's selling software, selling candidates. I don't want to say dissuade someone from coming into the organization, but make it very clear what the role actually looks like, the good, the bad, and the ugly. An example, for new folks that we're hiring at Guesty, outbound is a huge initiative for us. I actually tell the candidates what percentage of their pipeline is going to be self-sourced. I take it another step from there, and I actually show them what does self-sourced at Guesty means. It means being out in market, planning your own event, not just going through Salesforce and enrolling people in outbound campaigns, but being very, very specific what self-sourced actually looks like.
All right, Jonah, I want to dig into this idea of the test drive. Like, you're going to put people in a car and see if they can actually drive before you sell them the car. I love that idea. But I think a lot of people get distracted when you give them shiny, new, interesting things. And then what ends up happening is, we all know the best way to get promoted is like crush your current role. And then they stop crushing because they're doing all this other stuff. How do you set it up so that somebody understands you got to keep doing your role, but I'm going to give you this other thing to get some experience and to give you some of that juice you're looking for and trying something new?
Yeah, it's not easy. I think at the end of the day, it goes back to setting proper expectations. You have to tell this individual for the next 3 months, this might be the most challenging 3 months of your career. If I tell the rest of the team that I'm promoting Mark to a sales manager, and Mark had the worst quarter of his career, that's a bad look for me. That's a bad look for Mark. And hey, it's great that Mark learned how to run a team meeting, but the finance team doesn't care. The team doesn't care. In sales, there's a scoreboard. So I guess to answer your question directly, I am very, very clear with the expectation and the understanding that I'm asking this person, can you take on two roles for the next 3 months? Here's what success looks like at the end of the 3 months. It's, you need to come in over 100% of your target, but here's the baseline requirement for your IC performance. And here are the two or three things that I'm going to ask you to really step up over the next 3 months.
So you got the person, you set the expectations, but then you got the team. All of a sudden, the team shows up and Jonah's leading team meetings. Like, what the hell? Like, why is Jonah doing this? Why am I not doing it? I see some dominoes that happen because all of a sudden now somebody's doing something outside their role. How do you help the people with the expectations around that?
I think throughout my career, I've always had sales orgs where there's, you know, maybe two or three candidates that are right there and they might expect the promotion. But what I try to do is be very, very clear with Johnny and say, hey, Johnny, here's the reason why Jill is getting the first crack at this. She did X, Y, and Z over the last 3 or 6 months. So I try not to hide behind it. And I actually go to the folks that may be in contention for that promotion. I make it very clear that, like, hey, if you keep performing, there will be X, Y, and Z opportunity down the line. So people are not wondering, why is Jill leading this team meeting and not another person on the team?
Do you give everybody a crack at it? Or if Jill crushes, does Jill get the job?
I don't give everybody a crack at it. That one person is chosen because of, part of it is performance. Part of it is, are they helping others? Are they willing to step up and work with other departments? And do they want to spend 30 minutes with marketing and explain what campaigns are working, what campaigns aren't? So I do try to test folks even before the test drive and see, are they willing to take time away from closing to help others? And that gives me the confidence to say, hey, person X, you're the first person that we're going to give this pilot to for the next 3 or 6 months. And if you earn it, it's your job.
So I'm going to just pause for a second, Mondo, because this right here to me is one of the definitions of a great leader. Is being a great leader doesn't mean that you're always fair, meaning you give equal opportunity to everybody. What it means is you clearly explain what you're doing and why you're doing it, and then you follow through on the expectations that you set. And saying, well, hey, I got three people that are all great. Let me let each one of them lead the team meeting for a quarter. And next thing you know, Jonah can't hire anybody for a year because he's got two people slogging through team meetings when he already knows the person he wants to go. And I go back to our Jake Dunlap interview, Armand, where I think it was one of the coolest things that we've talked about so far, which is, if you're trying to get in the club, if you do all the right stuff, that means you get to move to the front of the line. It doesn't mean you necessarily get to go into the club. And Jonah is the bouncer. He determines who goes in the club or not. Now, you can line up and be second in line, and the next thing that comes along, you can be ready for it, or you can be super upset and hurt and jealous because somebody else got to go in for you. I think that's something that a lot of reps and salespeople don't recognize or acknowledge. There's only so much growth that the company can do. And his job is to determine the best person for the company and the team to be in there, not to make it so that everybody has a chance to do everything. And sometimes that's really hard. Joni, you tell me, reps don't know how hard that is for you. That's not easy for you to say no to two people that are deserving, is it?
Definitely not. I like the point that you're making, and life is tough. At the end of the day, all you can do is try to increase your luck surface area. And by making sure that you have a good relationship with your manager, by making sure you're going above and beyond and doing things outside of your scope of work to better the company, those are all things that are very, very important.
So Jonah, let's talk about like handling this conversation, because you talked about there are a lot of times where you'll have a Michael Jordan of a rep or a top rep who really wants to be a manager, and you know in your gut, they might not be fit to be a manager, even though they're an outstanding rep. How do you navigate that conversation with someone?
I have struggled with this for many, many years. And I will say over the last couple of years, I think I have improved quite a bit. Having those tough conversations is never easy. But at the end of the day, the longer you delay those things, and I think maybe Mark said it before, if you keep leading somebody on and they're expecting a promotion down the line, the problem is that negativity and that frustration, it's not specific to that person. That person then will create a toxic environment and start to infect the rest of the organization and say, you're never going to get promoted. It's never going to happen. So what I've really leaned into over the last couple of years is whether it's the minute you want to share that feedback, think about it, you share that feedback directly, constructively, and you always have to take it from the lens of the bigger picture for the company. Like a lot of people love to use the analogy of team sports in sales. If this person's a team player, they need to understand that I have a job at Guesty because I am responsible for the revenue growth of the organization. Unfortunately, my job is not to think about Johnny and Jill's career progression. I'm thinking about that because I want what's best for my team. I want what's best for the company. But I always try to handle those conversations early and often, be very clear. You don't sugarcoat it, and you explain the rationale, and you always take a team or company first lens when having that conversation. And what I've actually noticed, folks that I thought would quit on the spot, they appreciate it and they either work to get better, or guess what? They stay in that senior account executive role. They make a lot of money. They work on some side hustles and some side projects, and they're very happy in the role.
They're going to be upset about it up front, but you are totally right where there's a silent, slow burn that happens in an organization. And the next thing you know, you see a senior rep who's a little bit disgruntled going out on coffee chats with the new reps, and they're just telling everyone who says they want to be a manager, it's not going to happen. And they're going to ask why, and they're not going to have a reason to share with that junior rep. And so again, you're being transparent, having the uncomfortable conversation up front. Can we make this really, really real? Because I imagine there are managers who are listening to this right now who have a top rep who is literally asking them to be made a manager today. What are some of the things that you see in a top rep that would lead you to believe this person might not be the best manager versus the reps that you're like, this is not only a top producing rep, but also someone who could be a good manager?
The way top performers in sales are trained to think, it is a kill first mindset. You see a comp plan, and the first thought of a lot of top performers that I've worked with are, how can I break this comp plan and make as much money as possible? They need to be selfish. They need to think about their calendar, leaving any available slot open for a prospect. How can I fill it up with a revenue opportunity? Folks that I've promoted into management roles, like, sure, they think that way, but they also are willing and able to balance when new hires come on. They're asking you, hey, can I grab Jill and ask Jill to join my next sales call? They are not just thinking about their commission check or hitting 140% to target or President's Club. They are actually asking you, can I help with training? Can I take a recorded gong call and share it in the next leadership meeting? Those are all skills that a lot of times you don't see that in top performers. I can tell you right now, I wanted nothing to do with a marketing meeting. I didn't want to sit down with the new hires. I wanted to sit in my corner. I wanted to close as many deals as possible. That was just the mindset that I had earlier on in my career.
Yeah, I think there are two big things that
come out of this. The first is, are you willing to do things that literally you are going to take time that could have been spent selling deals? Are you willing to mortgage some of that time for the long haul, investing back in the team, knowing that that might not come back to you directly right away? That's number one. But then number two, do you have the ability to coach effectively? And that's the other thing that I oftentimes see isn't always there with the top sellers. They don't even know why they're good. You ask them to break down someone else's gong call and they're just like, oh man, there are so many things wrong with this, or they can't even break down their own gong calls. They're almost just like doing the highlight reel, but they can't actually explain what they saw in the prospect that led them to ask a certain question. And so for that reason, you need to test for one, their desire to do that. Are they willing? And then two, are they able to break things down as well?
To me, it's always, can the rep explain why they're doing what they're doing that makes them successful? Can they break down the process? Do you understand your own game enough to teach somebody else the game? And if you don't, then like, why would I ever make you a manager? Because all you're going to end up doing is turning into a super rep. Like, get me in front of them, I'll close them. And that doesn't help anybody out. That's bad leadership. So I love that, Mondo. Like, it's all about efficacy. That's what leadership is. Can you change their mindset? Can you change behavior? Can you change their skill set? Can you change their energy? If you can't, then you don't get to be a leader. And guess what? Anybody can help change somebody else for the better, whether you're their leader or their manager or not. And I can think of my best rep ever at Outreach. I tried to get him into sales leadership several times. He's the best psychological seller I'd ever seen. And the reason I kept trying to get him into leadership, even though he didn't want to, is every rep would listen to every one of his gong calls. Any rep that called him, he would spend half an hour on the phone with them. Everybody was copying what he was doing. And I was just like, dude, you're doing it already. He's like, yeah, but I'm working like 20 hours a week and making close to seven figures. He's like, why am I going to mess that up? And I was like, all right, good call, man. But that's the trait I'm looking for, is like, can you not help it? Because if you can't help it, then you're a natural leader. If you're having to be asked to do it, then what am I going to have to do for you when you're in the job?
Another thing that I really struggled with is relating to different personality types and different motivations, right? I was very motivated by being top of the leaderboard, seeing my name up there. Other people are motivated for different reasons, whether it's being in first place, whether it's money, making an impact, being recognized by the broader organization, moving into leadership. How can you relate to different personality types, different motivations? How can you really get in with those folks, understand that motivation, hone in on it, and figure out how to get more and more out of each team member?
Talking about changing roles and giving people a chance to change roles, I'm interested about your second tip, which is, if you want your team to change, you have to change. We can't just do a training about how to do discovery calls differently and expect the team to do discovery calls differently. How do you take your leaders and make sure that they're doing the change that you're asking the rep to do? Like, how does that translate?
First one, I have to imagine a lot of folks have done this before, but if you're trying to change from inbound to outbound, take your broader leadership team, go through LinkedIn profiles. I'll give you a very clear example. At Capchase, what we did is we sold a product to the VC community. And essentially what we did is we had our strategy team, we downloaded all of our contacts from LinkedIn, the entire leadership team, and we went through them and we all sent each person individual LinkedIn messages. We recorded the calls. We took some funny videos of all of us in conference rooms doing it. And we shared it at the next team meeting to show, hey, this is not beneath us. Here's how we're doing this. We're going through our network. We're sending cold emails. We're dealing with rejection. We're leaving voicemails. Some of our voicemails were garbage. Everyone laughed about it. And we just showed the team, hey, like, we're doing this. This is the new baseline of what the expectation is for you. So that's example one.
That is powerful right there.
I love that. I remember on Friday mornings, we would be doing these team dial blitzes. And we were trying to get the team to do more outbound. We were scaling up the team. Economy turned. We basically needed to go from 3x to 4x plus pipeline coverage. And I was like, what am I going to do? I would alternate. Some weeks, I would be cold calling prospects. And I would just tear through other people's territories. I would be like, assign me tasks. And then other weeks, where I didn't have any people to call, I would call candidates. And people would just hear me getting roasted from all of these people who I was trying to get to work for Pave. at the time. And so when you get in the floor, when you get in there with your team, there's just a completely different energy that comes to the table. So Joni, you talk about one, making the change yourself as a leader. You sprinkled in a few other structural changes you make. So you talked about the hiring profile, which I understand you might be looking for someone with outbound skills. You talked about having a comp plan that incentivizes the change too. There are lots of hot takes around spiffs and incentivizing outbound. Tell me more about what you do there.
It's actually not around outbound. It's transitioning from growth at all costs to efficient growth. How do you line up sales with customer success, with finance? Essentially, what we're trying to do is throughout my career, any revenue that would come in the door, we would accept it. We would celebrate it. A very, very clear change that we made at CapChase is we wanted to line up the sales incentives with the LTV of a customer. And what we noticed was in certain cohorts of customers or segments, there was high churn, but sales didn't care because sales was comp based on the new logo coming in and at closing. Our CS team had to deal with it, and it created a major, major divide between the two departments. And it also created a huge divide with finance because we were closing deals that might churn after 6, 9, 12 months and they wouldn't renew. So what we did is we tiered out all of our leads and deals, tier 1, 2, and 3. Essentially, if a salesperson closes a tier 1 opportunity, they get 1.2 logo credit towards their quota. If they close a tier 3, they get 0.75. And the way we actually calculated that was, keep in mind at CapChase, we had a risk and underwriting team that would underwrite the customer before they were closed, and that's when we would tier it. But you can also do that baking it into a lead scoring model as well. That is how we incentivize the sales team to care about the quality of customer that they brought into the CapChase organization.
There had to be some downsides. Like, take me a level deeper, because that sounds super brilliant. And I'm sure it worked out really great. But there had to be a couple of learnings along the way. Like, what did you do wrong?
Well, first, the equation that we use with our RevOps team to figure out what was a tier 1 versus a tier 3, we probably changed that thing 15 or 20 times, which when you're changing what goes into bucket 1, 2, and 3, sales reps will only work with you for so long. If you're changing those goalposts every 3 months, gets very frustrating. Problem number two is there was a point where percentage to quota was going up and to the right. There were a few months where logos were actually going down. And that was a very hard pill for our board to swallow. But Mark, the problem there was this cohort of customers that are signing up January 1st, 2024, we don't know what the lifetime value is going to be until the renewal date. So it was very much a, hey, Jonah, I'm trusting the work that you're doing here on tiering the customers, because again, commission payouts are going up, customers are going down. To actually see the impact on LTV, that's going to take some time. So it took a lot of massaging throughout the organization.
I bet that long-term, long-tail stuff is just a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. I think when you're in the board meeting and they're talking to you about this, did you have a deck? Do you have an equation? Because honestly, we know right now, so many revenue leaders are dealing with the, how do we grow responsibly? I think this is a very strategic solution of how to align lifetime value and retention to the pre-sales process, which is typically a missing link. How did you get the board to buy into that? I mean, what are we doing here?
We did have an advantage again, because we were in the lending space. So we had all of this data on all of our customers. So yes, what we did is we had a deck, we had 2 years of data. And what we did is we cut all of our customer data based off of the type of business. What is this company's R40, employee headcount growth quarter over quarter? We had all these different variables, and we looked at companies where the headcount was growing 20% versus 80% over time. Companies that were in prop tech versus HR tech, how are those performing through a downturn in the economy? Is this a need to have or a nice to have? We cut all of that data and we showed them the different ways that these customers performed over the last 2 years. And that's how we went to them and say, hey, we don't think that there should be a large deviation from this performance based off of these, you know, 15 different variables as to what makes a tier 1 versus a tier 3. And we want to align our customer acquisition plan, closing more tier 1 companies month over month. So like the last point I will highlight here on this note is when we showed the board our month over month revenue and logo acquisition, we actually showed all of the bar graphs based off of tier of business. And what they got really excited about was, although maybe logos weren't growing quarter over quarter like they were historically, the orange section of the bar, that was tier one. So really seeing that visual got the board pretty excited about the type of customers that we were acquiring.
Super thoughtful.
I think the key takeaway is you can align your comp incentives and your comp structure with whatever you're going after. I've seen people do outbound spiffs. I've seen people do deals that are created and closed in quarter type of spiffs. And I'm not the biggest spiff fan. And I love how you are not only living the change as a leader, but you're also living the change through the comp plan, the hiring profile, et cetera. Is there anything else that you're doing to properly enable or motivate your team to do this stuff? Whether it's metrics you're tracking every week to make sure it's actually happening, whether it's team rhythms or anything of that sort that really get people doing this and in the motion of it every single week?
Yeah, I think the other point here is just highlighting it, whether it's team meetings, whether it's dashboards. And at Guesty, on the top of our leaderboard, we have three reports: logos, revenue, outbound opportunities. Those are the three. Everyone wakes up every day, they see those three reports. In our monthly, quarterly reviews, it's top of the dashboard. I think you really have to let folks know this is something broader leadership team is laser focused on. This is what's being talked about. This is something that we view as a very important attribute of a top performer at Guesty. Someone who's not just taking what marketing's throwing their way, but able to build a sustainable pipeline on their own through outbound.
Boom. Jonah, amazing episode. Unfortunately, it is not 52 minutes to President's Club. It's 30 minutes to President's Club. And so we have to leave you with the final question. What is one bad habit that every sales leader out there should break today to make all the teams out there a little bit better?
I would say the days, whether you're a CRO, a VP of sales, a head of sales, staring at spreadsheets and not being able to actually do the job or not willing to roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty. I think with the focus on efficient growth versus growth at all costs, it's going to be very, very challenging to be a leader if you're not willing to roll up your sleeves, get your hands dirty. You need, again, this might be a hot topic. I've gotten the feedback throughout my career that I like rolling up my sleeves, sometimes too much, but you have to be able to sell the product. My recommendation is, whether it's CRO, VP of sales, head of sales, join a sales call at minimum every 2 weeks. You don't have to lead it. You can support it. You can be on an email chain. Join a sales call every 2 weeks. Don't be afraid of rolling up your sleeves and getting your hands dirty. I have really noticed that over the last handful of years, revenue leaders have gotten further and further away from the end customer.
Folks, get your hands dirty. We got a hands dirty in this episode. Jonah, this was freaking awesome, man. Everyone hang on for a 60-second recap coming up soon. Cheers.
Did you know that 60% of proposals are viewed on a mobile device? Which means if you're sending a text doc or a slide deck, the formatting is going to look really ugly and you're going to make a bad impression. Luckily, our friends at Quiller are here to help. Quiller pages are built on the web, which means they're mobile responsive and they actually look good on a cell phone. And Quiller is having an offer right now to upgrade your proposal from an ugly text doc to a Quiller page for free. So you can see what your boring proposal looks like as a beautiful Quiller page. There is a link in the show notes to take advantage of the offer. Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes.
This actionable competitive tactic from Clue is the trap question. Steer discovery toward the winning zone. If we're competing with a podcast that has no newsletter or webinar series, we might ask a trap question like, how do you figure out if those podcast listeners are making their way to your mailing list? And when you're in a head-to-head, there's no better way to prepare for your next competitive battle than with our trap questions and battle card templates from our friends at Clue. The link's in the show notes.
Today's tactic to triple your connect rate is brought to you by Rocket Reach, who provides data that lets you reach out to the right person at the right account at the right time.
every time you're reaching out to an account, pull down the contacts again. Yes, I know it sucks, but the average tech tenure is 2 years, which means 50% of the workforce turns over every year. So look up the account, pull anyone who was hired, and scratch anyone who was left. And one way you can pull verified and accurate data is with Rocket Reach. So if you like this, check out their toolkit on 8 ways to triple your cold call connects in the show notes. Alrighty, Mark, it's time for a 2x2 recap. What do you got for your two?
Number one is increase the surface area of your luck. I thought that was like a TM statement by my man, Jonah, like, go help out, go do this, go get involved in this. And I just love that concept of sometimes getting promoted and moving in your career takes luck. So increase that surface area of luck. And number two is don't let someone else's slow burn cause other people to catch fire. And this idea of, hey, I'm going to tell you what's going on early in the process so that you understand it, so that it's not like there's a bunch of frogs in a pot slowly turning up the heat and nobody jumps out and everybody ends up getting boiled. Just crank up that heat in a good, kind way and let people jump out of the pot if they need to. I just really love the concept of the slow burn is never just a singular person. It's always affecting people all around them. And then you got a real problem.
That was going to be mine, but it is so good. So I will double down on it. Number three, when you find someone who has the opportunity to be a manager or the potential to be a manager, test drive them first. And as you are test driving them, it is critical for you to go and have the conversations with the other people who are standing in line to be a manager and explain what it means for them to take that step themselves. And then lastly, number four, when you're trying to drive your team to outbound, you got to make the change everywhere. You got to tell the team that's what you're focused on. You got to change your hiring profile. You got to talk about it in every single team meeting. You need to update every single dashboard. You cannot just ask people to outbound and expect it to happen. So folks, if you like this one, this was personally one of my favorite shows. So why don't you go and connect with Jonah on LinkedIn, Jonah Mandel. You'll be able to find him, easy name, and tell him how much you liked his episode. Alrighty, folks, we'll catch you on the next one. Peace.
Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Supercadence by Influ2, which helps cut through the noise of oversaturated prospecting channels. If you want to get your prospects' attention, you got to do stuff a robot would never do. One of my favorite plays is getting warm introductions to the accounts that I'm targeting via salespeople who work at that account. Salespeople help salespeople. Another approach could be using Supercadence to run SDR ads to put a face to the name. Now, we worked with Influ2 to put together a special toolkit on ways to humanize your outreach, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes. Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes.